the other day. They're asking me,
how do you join?
I got two calls from men out of town in the Michigan. He wants to know more about gay places in Detroit.
We are recording.
Yeah, we are recording.
So I got this.
Okay. A napkin just on them or a tissue
here,
on them?
Here, oh, it to be one.
Let's get going and the tape started.
Yeah. You knew where it was, right?
Yeah. Okay. In going over, first of all, I want to say the only workshops I've ever heard of like this was some Wittgenstein did, where you had a sort of purpose and you changed to meet the needs, to combine the people you were working with and the goal. You would change the methods in order to achieve this. And it's theory construction insofar as when I see certain problems, I keep thinking, how is it going to make it clearer to people? Theory construction, then, is a combination between, we're going to move into logic, just straight logic is what I'm, the conclusion I came to. I'll tell you why, because looking at Anne's and going over yours, and I was finding some of the other papers, that if you don't use modal terms, if you don't use those letters and all, it's very difficult to understand what you're doing. It's very difficult to make it clear to people what the things are. Now, this is how it relates to theory construction, in which way and which way we're going to go about it, or what I want to do. Right? First of all, you have theory construction, you have the ideas, inspiration. In other words, you have a problem, like women are oppressed. You have some idea, you know, it comes to you, some place to begin. Now, theory construction, the function of that, the other part of it, is the critical function, so that you can see if your idea is true. So the first part is the idea. Something interests you. You got this idea, right? You write it down. What theory construction does is to see if it's true or not. And the reason that's particularly relevant in political theory, as I said before, is you're dealing with people's lives. Now, the first thing is set theory. Set theory has to do with class description. Is your major truth functional symbols like A, B, C, D, so on. It can be, can represent actions, it can represent characteristics, it can represent objects. Your logical symbolism is the connectives between the sets. So, Anne and Marlene had a theory they were working on about white people, what was it, feeling?
Inability
to feel. So that white people would be a set. Feeling, and what that is, what characteristics, those are, would be another set. Inability would be a quantification system, a restriction on it. That's a lesser thing that we would be dealing with. Your connectives would be and, or, if, then, and so on. Now, what this has to do with theory construction and deductive and inductive systems is logic is also the process by which you connect your premises and or deductions. So that we will get all of it in that way. And I can show, this came out of looking at the papers and what we're trying to do. Anne has, is not sure what I mean.
No, I understand. I have a whole mess of questions. But I'll ask later on.
Okay, now, actually, Anne's necessary, sufficient was the closest to, I thought it was correct, and then I said, oh, wait a minute, I have to look at it, right? It was still the closest to understanding the idea. But the difficulties of it, and why it is not such a good example, and why modal logic is better, is that it was a complex example. This complicated things so that a necessary condition, since you had a complex or compound example, you would have more than one necessary condition. This could lead people to think that necessary conditions could be more than one because of the complexity of the example, do you see? Now that wouldn't have happened if we'd been dealing, or if we could, we'll deal this way, but you've got to have those other tools, and I didn't want to get in to truth functional logic, but I think it's going to be the quickest way, actually.
Excuse me, Grace, if you say that Anne understood it best, but she had a multiple necessary, could you please go into that a little further?
By understanding the best, she understood that you had a phenomenon. Yeah. That's another thing. We have to get some books for the library. Some things, we're just going to have one that is not that good, but it's the best available, and it's much, much better than nothing. It's a dictionary of philosophy put up by the Philosophical Library. Now, we have to get that for the library here. It's one of those, you know, like, say, for instance, something I was looking at today, they have the best people in that area do the definitions, like Alonzo Church does a lot of the logical notation and so on.
Who's it put up by?
Put up by the Philosophical Library, and it's edited by, you know, Dagobert Runes. That name is like unbelievable. This is, though, in New York. That's important. I think that we're going to work through a lot of these elements of logic, but it's just going to be quicker in some way. And it's the simplest notation. So that when I said her example was the phenomenon was not a simple one, that is, a single object, but actually had conditions on it over and above what was implied by the particular thing, like fire. She had fire within a specified area. Now, within a specified area, among other things, raises the specified area thing. And there were certain, I did mark up certain things here, and I'll give back to you. For the fire, in other words, you had two things, fire and within a specified area. Now, you had more necessary conditions than you needed even for the fire. Whether you had to state the connection, whether that would be necessary in terms of the relationship could be the catalyst thing, when you mentioned that. Now, the specified area raises certain questions of space and time and the interdependency. Now, honey, that's loaded for an example. That's why if you use the modal thing, then we can work up to this kind of example and be clearer. But in order to explain, this example might mislead people if they tried to talk about it without knowing all these things that are involved in it, you see, into thinking, well, why do you have one necessary condition or several? Well, you have a little different example here. You see, you have certain problems. Already, fire within a specified area is a truth statement in that you have two sets and a connection, namely and, A and D. So that makes it much, much more complicated. Now, when I said she understood it the best, well, she understood you had an example. Necessary was smaller than sufficient and different in kind in that it had to become much more specific in sufficient. What's necessary and sufficient was also slightly different in quality, in that it wasn't just a combination of A and B, but was qualitatively different in the relationship between A and B than just A and B. Now, I don't know, I want you to be able to do theory construction. I want you to be able to fight me on my own ground, so that you've got to be strong that way. I don't know if we need, I hate that, you know, I've never done anything like this, but a blackboard or something, because everybody has to have the example.
Mm-hmm.
And if I put up the modal terms, it's going to make it, it'll be so clear to people, then the difference between, say for instance, I'll show you, this is something I was playing around with. So, okay, when you have, say for instance, you have phenomenon means, say, A, capital A. B could be necessary condition. C could be sufficient condition. Now, necessary and sufficient would have to be something to the effect of A equals, or actually what it is, it's a biconditional, we can get into that, what that, the difference between that and an equation. In other words, an equation does not have to go both ways, but a biconditional does. In other words, they must be absolute, they must be the same thing.
Mm.
Now, it gets tricky. See, what you're really saying is not necessary and sufficient equals, see this, well, okay, this is where we got off before when we were talking. Are people following?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Because the people, are you?
I probably wasn't there.
Oh, okay, well, it's all right, no. You were dead, that's okay.
Could it be like carbon plus oxygen equals carbon monoxide?
Well, no, I can make it, in the logic it's very clear, but I just wanted to see if I should go back a little bit, and everybody else no doubt can get clearer about it too. You have a phenomenon, that is some example. When you say B is a necessary condition for A, you say B is a necessary condition for A, like, say, for instance, oxygen is necessary for life, human life. The test for that is if you have A, then necessarily you have B. Remember what I said, without which, that was another way of putting it, but in the modal terms it would be, if B is a necessary condition for A, then if A exists, then B. If you have a living human being, you must have oxygen. Okay. Is that clear?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sufficient you have sufficient is a sufficient condition for A. Then you're saying A equals C. That is, if you state the sufficient conditions for human life, then if you claim you have human life, then you necessarily have C. Necessary and sufficient, the combination, what people were doing was saying, the confusion was, what is the difference between, now keep in mind, does everybody have the symbols we're using? That's why we need,
yes.
Can we use that as a blackboard maybe next time? Do you think
sure.
It would work with just white chalk?
Yeah, sure.
You think it would?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a memory.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should get a blackboard.
Why don't we buy a blackboard with a stand?
Yeah.
Or just something simple, just because it's easier. It's harder when we do it this way, and it's going to be harder for people.
How large should it be?
20 feet by 20 feet.
That's probably the best thing, because it's so large.
Yeah, that's not a bad size, but I don't know about the surface.
We'll get a decent size blackboard.
Okay, so everybody has the symbols. A equals a phenomenon. B equals necessary condition. C equals sufficient condition. Now, necessary and sufficient. What's the difference between B plus C? What is the difference between that necessary and sufficient are simply a combination of these two things, mm-hmm. just as they are? What is the difference between that and saying that when you put B and C together, you have a qualitatively different condition? Now, the way this would be expressed logically would be the difference between saying that B plus C equals A, and putting the parens. Now, parentheses restrict. So I'm going to use, there are many different notations, logical notations. In all of this, since I spent so much time, you know, trying to find my own way, I'm just using things that I think are best for us. And the logical notation I'm going to use is the most practical, the one that makes the most sense. But you'll have all the equipment, so don't get thrown if you see somebody else has a little different symbol for like and instead of the ampersand using the dot. Parentheses restrict and make it something different than simply B and C. Theory construction, we got to the set theory, we got to then the connectives between the sets, and then thirdly, what makes it into theory construction is the connectives between the premises and or deductions from those premises. Now the difference between we have here, what has come out of this is the distinction between a premise and a deduction from those premises combined with connectives implicit in. Look, this is very, very heavy. Yeah. So go over it a zillion times and we need a blackboard. But this is going to be, what I'm going over is saying right now what the whole thing's going to be, because it finally, after working on it for several hours, I've really got it worked out. The problems were. So a premise would be A alone. That's a necessary condition. In this little syllogism or little deductive system, theory construction we have premise one, A, necessary condition. Premise two, B. Conclusion, A plus B equals, well, we're using the wrong symbols.
Variables.
Premise 1A?
That was how I did it wrong before, right? It's B is the necessary condition.
Right.
The sufficient is C.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then we need another premise. I'm just thinking how we would work it out. Well, you know what I'm getting at. The thing is, how do you okay. One of the most common and most complex logical notations is the if-then combination. It looks real simple, but it isn't. And an awful lot turns on an understanding of it. A lot of combinations come out of an understanding of it. So what we're saying is, If you have A, the syllogism would go like this. If you have A, then you have B. You have the necessary condition. If you have a live human being, there is oxygen available. The sufficient. Is if A, if C, see, this is the difference. This is, I have to work on this one some more too, but I'm pretty sure the difference between necessary and sufficient is if C, then A. There's, now you see, it looks like a fairly, I mean, that's quite a distinction you already got going there, right? Yeah. It's reverse, for instance. That is, if C then A is equivalent to equal sign. Okay. Conclusion of necessary and sufficient, remember, is a biconditional. That means necessary is sufficient and A are equal in terms of transposition, full identity. So you have, if now you have B, A, and then the three bars, which is the biconditional, if and only if B plus C. And so there's no misunderstanding, you probably restrict it with the that's why we need some, so that we were the relationships there. Now that might look, what does this have to do with theory construction? Getting into, and I'll just, let's work on this a little bit more so we make sure everybody understands. You can go crazy with this logic issue. The way it's done in truth functional, and that's why I think we probably, everybody ought to get that elements of logic, and most of it we won't go through, but I think a lot of it just saves time so that everybody has the symbols.
Does it have a teacher manual? Does it have a teacher's manual for the answers and the exercises? I don't know if you write it on.
Yeah.
It does?
I know I have the same problem.
No. I'm saying there are some, yes. There is an answer thing, but it's very, very limited. So say, for instance, I would see more correct answers than it would as possibilities. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The trouble with logic, no matter, and the better people are at it, the more complex it gets. And it really, I know it used to shake me up when I'd be taught, people would say, well, that looks right. Does it look right? Oh, don't they know what they're doing? You know, this is like, I thought, Jesus, it's hard enough, and you got that clod up there, doesn't even know what they're doing. It's very, 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 these are symbols for like every possible combination. So that once you get in the habit of using these, but always also doing the theory in terms of working up things, you're gonna have a much more solid base in terms of theory constructions, which is what I was worried about before. Now, the way they write it up, usually, in terms of, all right, necessary condition. B is necessary condition of A if. This is where it'd be written up. You usually write it up in terms of an instance. But when you have something like this, A is the phenomenon. Okay, we have that. When you put that little X, you're saying, in every case of, in every instance of A, you're not just talking about a general characteristic. So when I talk about the class of women, and this kind of system makes it easier then to add on other characteristics and make clear what the relationships, it gets more complex. But this is the basic stuff. So if I was saying women in a class, all women, it would be W and Brent X, every woman. That's where that would be notated. So it'd be in every instance of, or in each instance, sometimes people make a distinction. All right, let's say in each instance of. Each instance of A, if A, then X is your variable, it's unlimited. The difference between X, between parentheses and X like that, that means you have to have a modifier. You see? When you have X in paren, you've got to have like a truth function. Now by that means what are you talking about? That's going to be hard. What are you talking about? Where you have X without parentheses, you're talking about, it's totally unlimited. You're talking about an instance of, which equals, at this point, the phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Or it equals... So it would be an instance of the phenomenon of a person existing . You have the necessary condition for that phenomenon if, on the condition that in every instance of a breathing person, it's a necessary condition, to satisfy being a necessary condition for a human existence, then every instance of A, or each instance, every means like more of a total, each means refers to quantity, is a quantifier. Okay, each existence, if you have that, then you have this necessary condition, which would be X, in other words, this
variable
B, and then it would be universal and quantified. See, because it works like that, in terms of the, this is like after like a zillion years of mathematical logic, it comes out, that's what it would look like. In an instance of, in the instance of the phenomenon, then you would have to have in each and every instance, uh-huh, case of oxygen.
In the center, what does that mean?
Then. Okay. No. That's the whole
thing. I don't know what that means.
See, you see why I finally reduced myself to a blackboard, which I mean, just to me, is like the all-time low or something. Okay, now we're going to, the connections are very easy. The ones I decided to use would be, and if you just put two things together, that does not necessarily mean and. That refers to their relationship and statements of. Universal always precedes quantified. In your, just like, think. Remember what I was saying about theory construction. You got, before you can talk about black women, you got to talk about all women. Subsets, you see what I mean? So for and, for the symbol and, for our uses, don't be worried if you feel like your head's kind of leaking at the seams, because this is the basic stuff and you'll be using, and it really sinks in. And I think just for simplicity's sake, don't use this kind of thing because it can confuse you when you use your X's all the time. Ampersand, it seems to me the clearest, and what we want for our purposes is what's clear. generally what you use if you do a great deal of logic and theory of construction, you use just the dot, but that can get very puzzling too. So just the ampersand we'll use for and. So when you say P and Q, put the ampersand, and don't just put across, because then you'll get mixed up when we have X's and it won't be clear. Is it on its side? Or, okay, well, I'll pass it around. Ampersand is...
Well, what was that backwards C then? I thought that was...
No,
that stands for...
I'll explain that. You can't do one of what?
One of those ampersands.
Well, practice. Mine doesn't look very good. Or is the V symbol. Little V is the simplest one. It's a notation. If then, which is usually written in terms of then that's where you have your horseshoe on its side.
Oh, that's if then.
If then. Now that is a real dilly, so, you know, just tread very lightly on that. Roughly it means P only if Q, which is what we were doing. Did you notice that we put, instead of, when we said you have the phenomenon, you would think that B is a necessary condition. You would think it would go necessary condition equals the other. But in truth, functional logic, when you put it in symbols, you realize what you're saying is it equals, which is not what you want to say. What you want to say is, if you have the gross phenomenon, it must contain, each instance must contain an instance of the necessary condition. So you're turning it what it looks like backwards. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you say, you have the phenomenon P, only if Q. So Q if, so the, all right, here's a good example. Let's just do it again and again, because this is really what, you know, people take their graduate exam after 6 years.